first bill.
You okay on that?
Yeah.
Okay. Call for the question.
Call the roll, please, Carol.
Senator Dean.
Aye.
Senator
Frye. Aye.
Senator Simmons.
Aye.
Senator Otto. Senator Cole.
Aye. That's good. Thank you. Now, let's see where we are. Senator, looks like Phillips is here. Is he gone again?
Oh, he's here.
He's here.
I'm Senator Frye. Looking for the backup, Senator.
What number?
We're on 2042. We're back on 2042. Representative Phillips is here with amendments which he now has drafted. And it says, however, the division may waive the income limits for elderly households seeking residence within an elderly disabled housing project if a person in the household falls within the charge calculation described in 456.5155B. Can you tell us what that is?
Yes, that
exactly.
Well, I'll pull the statutes and I can do it.
That section refers to specifically to.
In fact, we have that gave me enough copies for the entire committee.
Well,
good.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Paul Phillips, State Representative District 9. The question with regard to what the target population means, this amendment is cross-referenced to target population under ORS 456.515 sub B talks about disabled persons with disabilities requiring special housing conditions. The key issue on this one is the subsection C of 5B, which is a physical impairment substantially limiting ambulation. As you recall from my testimony the other day, I'm sure, we were looking for a flexibility where the housing division may waive when appropriate because of a disability, when the disability wasn't severe enough for an individual perhaps to go to a nursing home for full time, or that was certainly severe enough so they were having difficulty with maintaining their own residence. I've worked with the industry members involved and with Maynard Hammer and Debbie Wood from the Housing Council to make sure that this wording was flexible enough that they could work with it, and directed to a limited population that they felt, and I certainly feel, needs some assistance in this program, so.
Okay, so we're talking about
that. Madam Chairman?
Yes, Senator Day.
First of all, Representative Phillips, almost everyone that's come before this committee has submitted amendments and won't bother to follow the rules. And I know you submitted them, but frankly, when we submit amendments, the name and the origin, is it the home builders or is it you or who is it? Is this your amendments?
These are my amendments, sir.
Okay, then you should put your name on them in the future.
I
That's what the rules call for. Secondly, let me ask you, does the housing division and the housing committee support this?
Yes.
They do?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other further questions, comments?
Sure, the only comment I make is that they include these youngsters of 58 as elderly.
Yes, I remember Senator Simmons fighting very hard to get those 58-year-olds included in 1981, and that was a very major struggle, so I'll tell you that.
I guess this is
in spite of all the folks that are out there giggling now.
Well, you're considering the youth, too. So.
Yes. We decided you needed to have a transition period to get in that housing before you were
ready. Looks like it's arrived.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
comments, questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Can I move?
Yes, I'd appreciate
Madam
you.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to move amendments dated 5-2385 to House Bill 2042A-6, submitted by Representative Phillips, to House Bill 2042.
Okay. Senator Day moves the amendments as defined and presented by Representative Phillips. Are there objections?
Thank you.
So ordered. No, I have a request to say that Fred Van Anna wants to sign up on 2042 behind you. So if you'll be quick, I understand there are additional amendments.
Oh, okay.
Which I guess I would say I'm not inclined, and I haven't seen them yet. I've been notified of them, but I don't want to spend a lot of time on them.
I'm Fred Van Anna, appearing before you on behalf of the Associated Owners of Retirement Apartments. These are the people who own virtually all of the units that are covered in the amendments presented by Representative Phillips. We would like to suggest two additional amendments to the ones that you have just adopted. The first one would occur on line 27 in the amendments that -6 that you've just adopted, and say, and shall waive where vacancies exist.
Wait just a minute, please. Let's go a little slower. Now, where at line 26?
Line 27.
All right.
After waive, and shall waive where vacancies exist.
Next.
The second amendment that we want to present is on page 2 of the amendments, line 3, striking B. So it would refer to the entire target population. The amendments that are before you address really only the disabled. And the thrust of the second amendment that we present to you would make the give the housing division the authority to waive it for both the elderly and the disabled. The problem that you have is, if you think about the problem in some of the communities where this is the only project, and we're talking about congregate care projects, projects where you not only have room, but you have full food service, a very specialized type of housing. Take Roseburg, for example, which only has this kind of a project. If a person in Roseburg wants to move into this project and they don't meet the income, they exceed the income limits, they have to leave the community to find this kind of a project, or they have to go to a full care nursing home. And these are very specialized projects that fit between the conventional apartments and nursing homes. And to put an arbitrary income limit on them prevents some people in the community or in the area from obtaining the services that these specialized projects provide. We would encourage your adoption of those two additional amendments. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Other questions? I think this goes far too far for a simple little amendment on the bill, because it takes the elderly and disabled housing bonds into a very broader, and the whole multifamily people who complained to us so bitterly last session about the state subsidizing multifamily housing and those kinds of things on the basis of income requirements, and now to open it up totally to anyone in the elderly population is really beyond where I feel like we can go with an amendment to a major bill like this. So I'd consider it at some point in time, but I think it's especially to say shall, and if the committee would want to adopt these amendments, I would ask that we not take action on the bill today and that we take it up another time. So that's up to the committees, I think.
I would like to make a crack at it, so
okay.
I don't want to delay it, but
okay.
I would like to.
Then we'll do it another time.
All right, fine.
Thank you very much. Who is John... Tom Mason isn't here. We took care of 901.
What others are we on about?
Well, I hate to start the telephone, let's see where we are here.
Telephone shouldn't take more than 10 or 15 minutes.
Frank is here. Let's take 2324, which is a banking division bill. Well, not banking division bill,
Another banking bill. I can't believe it.
Madam Chairperson, members of the committee, I'm Frank Donner with the Oregon Bankers Association. Current law in Chapter 82 prescribes that consumer contracts that contain prepayment penalties or provisions prohibiting early payment must contain a notice. That notice must be in 10-point type and it must be bold. 2324, as it comes to you, would provide the alternative of underlining that notice. More and more, we're preparing personalized consumer contracts with word processors, some remote terminals, and we're having difficulty with the bold requirement. The notice would still stand out. The consumer would still be made aware of that notice when it is a part of the contract. The alternative is to use pre-printed forms and thus deny the consumer the benefits of having the personalized consumer contracts. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Madam Chair?
Certified.
Would you have any objection if it was required that this be in all caps as well as underlined?
We'd have no difficulty with that.
Nonetheless, worth bringing up or not, I guess.
I would respond, Senator Fryer. I believe that it is the I believe the contract where there is a notice is it. I think the practice is to have it in all caps. We just didn't think of that. We have difficulty with the bold.
I understand that, yeah.
Sir Jay.
Well, I wouldn't have difficulty putting it in caps if that isn't going to create a problem.
It's really no big problem with me. I just kind of
I thought it might
stand out a little better. It stands out a little better, but whatever is comfortable.
Any additional discussion about this issue?
Senator Fryer.
Aye.
Senator Simmons.
Aye.
Senator
Otto.
Aye.
Thank you.
Senator Fryer doesn't really
know. Away from combination 2281, we have a telephone bill, so I really need Senator Otto here to discuss anything with respect to Senate Bill 17, and I hate to start the telephone bill until we get there. We also have a Senate bill, which is a new one, which got a move, I think. It's the one that we asked to be drafted. Steve Hawes with the Railroad Division, Senate Bill 912. I guess I'd ask Steve, if you come up and briefly deal with that, because we have to move Senate bills. This is one that was just referred most recently to our committee. It was a long time in drafting and a long time in getting through the Rules Committee. So Jack Caldwell is here too.
Would you like Jack to join me?
Yes, that would be
maybe
nice.
Even shorter.
That would be thoughtful.
You're going to make it short then.
And I will make it short. It's complicated. It also is sort of, we've got some pre-arrangements with the House Committee that that they're going to spend more time on it than we have because they don't have any other bills in their committee. I just want to say to the committee members that we would expect you to work with additional amendments on the House side to make sure that you go over this carefully. But in the meantime, Mr. Hawes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Steve Hawes, Deputy Real Estate Commissioner. What you have before you in Senate Bill 912 is an abbreviated, modernized version of a public disclosure requirement with some other consumer protections for those engaged in the sale and purchase of campground interest. Very briefly, a campground interest, similar to a timeshare, and also similar to subdivision sales, is the interest, or the sale of an interest, which is a membership right in a campground. Normally these are recreational vehicle campgrounds. They are simply a site, usually serviced with some common facilities where you can, as a member, come in and park your vehicle for a certain number of days as a part of your membership. Campground interests, as I say, are not timeshares currently under the Timeshare Act. They are not currently found to be subdivisions or series partitions under that similar act. This act would be set up separately with them, and as I say, a modernized, abbreviated version. The bill before you represents a compendium of both some model legislation that's been developed by some of Mr. Caldwell's folks, also supported by many of the real estate administrators throughout the nation, as well as being partially built upon a model from the state of Washington, where Washington has, for at least 4 years, had a campground registration law. The bill very simply does about four major things. First, it requires a registration by the campground developer who wants to sell these memberships. It requires a registration with the real estate commissioner, followed by disclosure to the individual purchaser, again very similar to the consumer protection laws we otherwise administer. Third, it provides a right of cancellation for campground membership purchasers. It provides a cancellation privilege for the first 3 business days following any purchase, and where the purchase has not been made subject to an inspection of the campground itself, it's an off-site purchase, let's say, it allows 6 business days for cancellation. The final thing that it does is, unlike the other laws, it allows what we'll call an experiment for the next 2 years, a special licensing for campground salesmen and brokers, those who are actually dealing with the public in the sale of this commodity. Right now, timeshare and subdivision and series partition and condominiums must be sold by real estate licensees where it's done by someone other than the absolute owner. We think it is a reasonable experiment. Mr. Caldwell and his representing his campground ownership interest has worked with us. We've worked with both the national and other states in terms of what our legislation would provide. We have proposed some amendments that we've mutually agreed upon. They are known as Senate Bill 912-1 with a one-page supplement dated today. Those amendments are agreed on, and I can tell you at this point that there is no dispute between the parties to this legislation on the legislation as it would be amended by 912-1 with the supplement.
Madam Chairman?
Senator Dan.
You agree with the industry's proposal that giving them until September 1 of 85 to comply with the minimum requirements?
Madam Chair, Senator Dan, yes, we do.
Is that encompassed in these amendments? I don't see it.
Yes, it is encompassed in the short supplement amendment that's dated today.
Okay. And what about the figures, Madam Chairman?
Go ahead.
What about the figures in dash one, dollar figures on 7 and 9 of the amendments? What are you going to place in there?
Okay, the dollar figures you'll find in 912-1 substitute $35 per hour for the division's work. This is
just a minute. In one, I find those figures?
Yes, sir.
Well, I don't find them. That's why I'm asking.
Okay. If you look at 912-1, line 7, first page 4, line 16, delete blank dollars, insert $35.
Okay.
That is $35 an hour that would be the registration fee, $35 an hour for our staff work, okay, reviewing and preparing the registration.
Okay. What do you charge now for a similar type of service?
$35 an hour. And I say that with your understanding that we have different fees in some of these older laws, but the newer laws that we're setting up are $35 an hour for our work.
Okay. What about the other one?
Line 9, same page. This is the registration fee for the salespersons and brokers, $50. It's roughly one half of our 2-year fee of $90 for real estate salesperson.
Okay. Thank you, Manager.
Mr. Call, does anyone have any additional questions?
Yes, I have two questions.
Okay.
First question is on line 17 of page 1 of the
the bill.
Right.
Okay. The membership camping contract then is defined there and says that the right to use for more than 30 days the campground. Now, is that 30 days? Is that for the over the life of the contract, or is it for a year, or what is contemplated there?
Life of contract.
Yes, these, if I may interrupt Steve asked for that, Senator, this is the definition that is contained in the American Land Development Model Act, and it refers to right to use for more than 30 days over the life of the contract.
Over the life of the contract.
It would not apply to a KOA type of overnight stop. That's the idea, is to change to make these different from the KOA.
Yes. All right, now,
if I might, Madam Chair, Senator Fry, if you look down on lines 26 through 28, you'll see the other half of the, let's call it the KOA exemption.
Okay, well, that leads me to my next question, then, and that is subsection B there, beginning on line 29. Membership camping operator does not include the person, and so forth and so on, who does not own campgrounds and facilities. Are those people regulated in some other way?
Madam Chair, Senator Fry, they are not. This is, and let me draw the analogy. In the timeshare law, these would be the exchange companies, which are also not regulated under the timeshare law. They simply provide a central bank where the owner of X campground can get together with an owner of Y campground and exchange the memberships. They are not developers. They are not selling a right to use. They are simply providing a marriage service for folks that want to trade locations or times.
Okay, fine. One last question, Madam Chair. Does that understand that this is brand new law in Oregon?
Correct.
Why do we have an emergency clause in this bill?
We have an emergency, Madam Chair, Senator Fry, we have an emergency clause on the bill because, as Mr. Caldwell will explain to you, with the growth of campgrounds all of a sudden here in Oregon, we thought we had fixed the jurisdictional question under the old subdivision law back in 1975 and 77 legislation. It appeared that we had not fixed it. That was discovered a few months ago. That was why this legislation came in. It is not subject to regulation under any other laws, and we believe it should be.
Well, yes, I can understand that you would agree to that, but I'm always curious to know why there's some impelling need to have an emergency clause, and I'm not satisfied that there's a need here, but I guess we can argue about that later.
Mr. Caldwell.
Madam Chair, in line 17 there, Senator Fry's question brought up, is that comma between use and for necessary, or is that what maybe leads to confusion?
Did I say we were not going to look at this bill very thoroughly and let the House do it? But I'm convinced also that the House probably wouldn't ask that question. So I'm going
to...
Steve, can you explain to us why that is comment?
Why?
Madam Chair,
we need to go through English 102.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, let me put it this way. If I were still a legislative council drafting legislation, number one, I wouldn't use for more than 30 days because I think any date time period is good in terms of the definition. The KOA exclusion really comes in down below, and that's why I hadn't really paid much attention to it. Secondly, I guess I'd never draft it that way, to say comma for more than 30 days, comma. I'd make sure it modified directly without comma is exactly what we meant. So if anything, I'd take the commas out, Senator Simmons.
Well, if we make some amendment 12, of course, if we adopt 912-2, I guess.
We can make amendments, yes. First of all, obviously we can make amendments, and I think we can, at a minimum, delete the comments.
Isn't that what sort of led to your confusion about
yes.
The I'm sorry to interrupt with such a petty, pecunious thing, but I think we should write laws to mean what they say, and there is a law that says that contracts will be written in plain English.
Let's not bring that one.
Give us the next session.
Mr. Caldwell.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jack Caldwell. I've submitted some testimony, which I will not go through in detail, but I would like to say that I'm an attorney. I practice law in Oregon City, and I have represented the campground industry since it started in this state. I'm here on behalf of three clients, Thousand Trails Incorporated, Trails End Resorts and Old Mill Marina Resorts. Thousand Trails, you probably know of. It's the largest, oldest, and original membership campground company.
Madam Chair.
Sir.
Mr. Cole, again, to be correct, did you represent Adventures Unlimited when they were
No, sir.
In business?
No, sir. I represented these three companies.
Well, that was in Oregon probably 20 years ago, was when Roger Martin was chairman of one of the committees in the House, I know, and at that time there was similar legislation proposed, and the man who originated Adventure Unlimited went up with Mr. Colt in Seattle and started Thousand Trails. So,
well,
just to correct,
okay, that's an interesting piece of history, and Mr. Colt claims to have conceived the idea, but I won't argue with him because he's my client. I won't argue with you either.
Ask him if he knows David Sawyer.
Trails End Resort started at Seaside. It's a smaller company. Both Trails End and Thousand Trails are two campgrounds in Oregon. Trails End is at Seaside and over by La Pine. It moves the road where you go up to Palina and East Lake. And Thousand Trails is on the Little Deschutes, just south of Sun River, and also Pacific City. Old Mill Marina Resorts is a single campground company at Garibaldi, and they are unique in that they also have a marina membership. The confusion of what these things are is quite great, and I think we need to understand, as Steve has said, that it is not a subdivision, it isn't a timeshare, it isn't a buy your lot in the campground, and it isn't like going into KOA and renting a space for overnight. And I equate it more to the membership in a health spa or a tennis club. It's the same sort of thing. In most of those, an initial membership fee is charged, and then there are monthly or annual dues. That's exactly the same way membership campgrounds work. Members get no ownership in any of the land or facilities any more than a member of a health spa gets an ownership in the Nautilus machine. When Thousand Trails wanted to expand in 1977, Milt Cove and I met with the real estate division. They had some internal disputes as to whether they had jurisdiction, and ultimately came up with the decision which is set forth in the exchange of correspondence of March 7 and 8, 1978 attached. The business has operated on that basis since, unregulated, but it has been unregulated, but it is still subject to enforcement. And,
Senator Day?
Can I interrupt you, sir?
Certainly.
I read your testimony. Do you support the bill as amended?
Yeah, I was just wrapping up with that, Senator. Yes, sir. I want to say that that there are two sets of amendments, I think, that got floating around. There's the 912-1 in two pages and 912-2. We strongly oppose 912-2. We very strongly support 912-1 amendments and the bill as submitted.
Samantha, you also support, Madam Chairman, the additional supplement that Mr. Haas submitted today?
Yes, sir.
That takes into consideration some of the points you raised in your written testimony?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, if you have anything additional to add, Mr. Cole?
No, that's
it. Any questions, Senator Haas?
No.
Senator Simmons? I guess having, again, other than the commas, I know that we've looked over the bill, but I would be inclined to adopt the amendments.
Madam Chairman, I can check this thing on the amendments dated 5-21-58, LC 2491, to Senate Bill 912-1, and the supplement amendments submitted by Mr. Hawes, dated May 23, 1985. I would remove those amendments to Senate Bill 912.
Okay. Is there discussion to Senator Day's motion to adopt?
And I include the comma that Senator Simmons is worried about.
Two commas.
Two commas, yes.
Deletion of those. Two commas on line 17.
Right.
Senator Fry. Comments? Objections to the motion on adopting the amendment? So,
the bill of law is amended to the due pass recommendation.
Senator Gray to move Senate Bill 912 as amended to the floor with the DFAS recommendation. Discussion.
Well, the carrier should be prepared to answer the question. Why is the emergency clause in there?
Okay, the carrier will be prepared to answer the question, whoever that is. When is he last? It might be you. Call the roll call.
Senator
Gray. Senator Simmons.
Aye.
Senator Otto. Senator Cohen. Aye. Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have people who are waiting on Senate Bill 17 to really ask. It would be my intention to move out Senate Bill 17 Tuesday, but the Department of Veterans Affairs and Howard Rankin are here today. They will not be here next Tuesday. I need to have anyone who has questions on that bill to...
I've got two questions I want to
raise them now, right, so that we can get the answers before they leave or whatever. So
I have Mr. Rankin and Mr. Magnus come up wherever they are. Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I have
discussed this. Mr. Magnus, you can identify yourself for the record. Mr. Rankin, identify yourself for the record.
I'm chairman of the committee. My name is John Mangus, and I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs.
Chairman, members of the committee.